Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. I'm here with my guest, Todd Henry. I was just talking to Todd and reminding him that my very first podcast ever that I was on, the podcast that I was interviewed on, Todd did. Todd's been doing podcasting since 2005, years before most of us knew what podcasting was. And he's a really, really fantastic guy. That's becoming a really clear criteria for being on this podcast, is you have to be a really decent human being. And Todd is a very decent human being. He's a really great guy. He's the author of, most recently, Louder Than Words, Harness the Power of Your Authentic Voice, which I thought on a number of different levels was a very excellent book and a very worthwhile read. Whether you are a creative professional or whether you are a leader in an organization or whether you're just a regular person who's wanting to get their voice out in some way, it's a really smart book, which we'll talk about in a second. He was also the author of The Accidental Creative and Die Empty. He's the founder of Accidental Creative, a company that helps people and organizations generate brilliant ideas. One of the things that I like also about Todd is that his ideas are not just theoretical. They're very grounded in practice. That, you know, what we know, if you heard actually my Jeff Colvin interview, who originally, before his most recent book wrote Talent is Overrated, it's all about practice. It's all about getting out there and doing it over and over and over again. And Todd has some great methods in here about the practice of being authentic to an audience, which are both important parts, which we'll talk about. So, long introduction. Todd, thank you so much for being on the show and welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a joy to be here. And, you know, I've been a huge fan of your work for a long time. So it's great to have this conversation, to be on the other end of the mic. It's kind of weird to be interviewed by you because I love your work so much.
You're kind and generous. So this, I think this is an important book. And let's just start with the big idea. What's the big idea? Why did you write this book? And what's the big idea behind it?
So I spend a lot of my time working with teams of people who have to turn nothing into something. They have to turn their thoughts into value. And so, you know, my first sort of area of study was how do we deal with the pressure of doing that every day? And that kind of became my first book, The Accidental Creative. And then, you know, people would come to me and say, hey, you know, I feel like I'm pretty organized. I'm getting my work done. That's great. I'm having good ideas, but I feel like I'm not doing my best work, right? And that was what led to the second book, which was Die Empty. It's about, you know, are you sure you're doing a lot of work, but are you doing the right work? And then people started coming to me, Peter, and I'm sure this probably happens to you too. And they say, great, I'm getting around to the important work, but nobody's paying attention. Nobody's listening to what I have to say. And so that led me then to focus in on, well, how do people whose work resonates deeply, people whose work is compelling, resonant, it's precise, it's consonant, how is it that those people are able to do that and introduce their work in such a way that it connects with the people they're trying to serve? And so that was really the genesis of Louder Than Words, is just trying to figure out how is it that that some people are able to create work that is compelling and resonant and connects deeply with an audience and stands the test of time, whereas other work just kind of fades into obscurity.
So that's one of the things that I found so profound about this book, right? Which is that we think our authentic voice is just our voice. And so we should just put it out there. But you spend a tremendous amount of time and put a lot of thought into the audience, right? This idea that, you know, being authentic is not all about you in the outside public world, that it is also about the audience, and that, you know, you really focus on the importance of the audience. When you focus on the audience, how do you not lose yourself?
That is a great, great, great question. This is the tightrope that we have to walk, right? If we want to do resonant work. Of course, it's about us because it's about what we care about. It's about what we want to communicate. You know, it's about our deeper, you know, productive passion, our compelling why. All of those things are important to authentic communication, but it's not all about us. It's also about the impact that we want to have. It's about the audience that we want to reach. It's about what they care about. It's about leading them to a place, you know, achieving a sense of of impact with our work that is defined by the vision we have for the audience we want to serve. So if we care deeply about something, then of course we're going to care about the impact of that thing that we care about, which means we have to not only consider ourselves, we have to consider the audience we're trying to reach. It's possible to communicate something that is, you know, from our perspective, it's something that we're centered in on. It's our productive passion. It's, it's driven by a sense of mission, and we have a real clear understanding of what it is we want to communicate, but it could fall flat if we don't in turn consider who am I trying to reach, what do they care about, where am I trying to lead them, which is I think a really important question, and how can I contextualize my work so that it's more likely to click with them. Now some people say, well, that's just marketing. Well, yeah, I mean, in a way it kind of is marketing, right? But it's not marketing in the way that I think we tend to think of it. It's not sleazy. You're not positioning yourself, you're not putting up a false facade, but you're also not just, you know, like many of us think about with authenticity, you're not just opening the kimono and saying, oh, come all ye, and if you like me, you do. If you don't, you don't, right? Because I think that's a very self-serving form of authenticity. I think genuine authenticity is about putting what you care about on your sleeve, letting people see that you have skin in the game, investing yourself in your message, but also investing yourself in your audience and recognizing it's not just what I say. My voice isn't just what I say. It's how I'm received. It's how other people connect with what I'm communicating. And when you have both of those things going, something really magical happens.
And it's a challenge, right? And it's a challenge, yeah, not only because, you know, we're walking that tightrope that a lot of us slip on one side or the other, but, you know, you talk about identity, you talk about starting with from this place of who are you? And it occurred to me as I'm reading, this is something I struggle with too, which is when I am my most authentic, I'm also my most vulnerable, right? Yeah. Because I'm not just putting out stuff I want to sell, I'm putting out a deeper part of myself that I want people to be attracted to, right? I want to speak to this audience, but it's not just an empty shell. I'm not empty marketing. I'm actually putting out something really important. And so how they respond is important. And I guess the question that I have related to this balance is, how do we manage our own emotion? How do we manage our fear, our the vulnerability of really asking who we are and really authentically putting out that out there in a way that we hope will be received when it may or may not be received?
So this is a great, great question. And I would love to offer some pithy response like, you are not your work. You are not the same as your work. But honestly, I don't believe that. I think you very much are your work. I think the pragmatist in me says, no, when you put yourself out there in some vulnerable way, you are putting a part of yourself out there and you're offering up a target to other people to shoot arrows at. I mean, you and I have both written books, and we know that there are just people out there who will say mean, nasty things about your books in a public forum, and there's no accountability. They can just do what they want. And, you know, it's like offering people the opportunity to step up to a counter and just go to the bathroom on the counter in a coffee shop and walk away, you know, like right at the point of purchase with no accountability. I mean, that's basically what we do. And so the reality is, yeah, of course you're putting yourself out there, which is why a deep understanding of who you are is important. And understanding the impact that you're trying to achieve has to become really an obsession for you. You have to drill down on, what are the pillars that I'm founding my work upon? You know, what is the productive passion or the thing I'm willing to suffer on behalf of? This, that word passion comes from the root word that means to suffer, right? Doesn't mean we have to suffer, but it means we're willing to suffer if necessary to achieve an impact. That's what the word passion means. So I have to ask myself every day, what am I willing to suffer on behalf of in order to achieve an outcome? Because I care more about the outcome than I do about the temporary suffering. And anytime you put yourself out there in a vulnerable way, you are going to have people who shoot arrows at you. The only path through that I've discovered is to drill down on what is worth it to me. And you have to answer that question for yourself. Nobody can answer it for you. For me, you know, people shoot arrows at my work all the time. I don't like it, but that's fine, because you know what? I've had enough of a track record of impacting people that I can point to it and say, that is worth the pot shots that I take. That is worth the criticism I receive, because that outcome, that help that I'm providing to people and to companies, is more important to me than gaining the approval of people that are never going to like my work anyway.
You know, you're saying, I think, two very important things that are slightly different, but equally powerful. One is, you're sort of saying, first of all, we have to grow a thick skin, that creativity, that leadership, that anytime we're going to put ourselves out there, we're going to get these pot shots. And leadership calls us to grow a somewhat thick skin, right? And we still have to have our eye on our audience and to say, you know, are we generally meeting the need that we're wanting to meet? But at the same time, we have to realize that's going to happen and we can't, you know, we have to grow that thick skin. The other thing is, it reminds me of the story that a very close friend of mine, Murmur Blakesley, she was my ski coach for many years, and she's a writer, and now I teach skiing with her, actually. But she's an amazing woman. And I said to her, how do we teach instructors? How do we give them feedback? Because they take it very seriously and they take their skiing very seriously. And her view is, you know what? It's just skiing. It really doesn't matter. Just give them feedback. But I pushed her on it. I said, well, you know, you teach writing. So how do you, you know, that's a creative task and people's writing is very close to them, right? It's very, that is their authenticity. How do you give them feedback and not offend them or hurt them or drive them away from their creative process? And she said, oh, it's easy. It's not about them. It's about the story. I'm not an advocate for them. I'm an advocate for the story. I want the story to be the best thing it can be. So my feedback is about how do we together make this story the best it can be. And it's what you're saying, which I think is really beautiful, which is, you know, what is the outcome of what we're trying to produce? And let that be bigger than us. Let that be more important than we are. Let that, you know, the success of that be more powerful than, you know, our own concern about our egos.
Absolutely. That, and, you know, I think what you just illustrated as well is an important principle, which is everybody wants to be a leader, but nobody really wants to, or very few people want to do leadership, you know, and the art of leadership is the art of wielding authority well, because we have authority and we have responsibility. But I think sometimes we get out of whack and we like to wield our authority without the responsibility of action, without the responsibility of the consequence for our choices. And I think whenever we have the ability to influence other people, we are leading them, which means that it's not about us. You know, that means that, you know, the leader gets to take the most arrows. Whenever we're leading other people, we're putting ideas into the world. That's what leadership is. We're putting ideas into the world, hoping to influence people. We have to assume the responsibility for that action, which means that we have to be willing to take arrows in order to achieve an outcome that we love. We have to do things we don't like in order to achieve an outcome that we love. And that's, I think that's what leadership is all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's what I talk a lot about, emotional courage. It's the willingness to feel everything. If you're willing to feel everything, then you could pretty much do anything, right? Nothing stops you from doing anything. If you're willing to feel shame or embarrassment or failure or rejection, then you can tolerate that and then just continue to move on. And that feels very important from a get your authentic voice out there in the world so people can hear it way.
Absolutely.
One more thing is that you talk about these steps of creativity, and one of them is emulation.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating because I think it's so true. And yet it's also something that many of us might resist because, you know, from a creative process, it feels deeply uncreative. Like, I'm like, in order for part of my process, I've got to actually copy people. And, you know, it reminds me of that Ira Glass quote that I think you mentioned in your book and that I've always really loved, which is, you know, the synopsis. Well, what you could, if you remember it, you could share it or I could share it.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea being that, you know, the problem with people who are creative is that we have taste and we know what we like and what we don't like. And so when we go to make something, we're always comparing our first feeble efforts against the absolute best thing that's ever been done, right? Because we have good taste and we know what it should look like. The problem is we fall flat. It doesn't work. It, you know, we can't measure up to our expectations. And so a lot of people quit. But the way that you close that gap between what you perceive you want to be able to do and what you're actually capable of is just practice, sweat, you know, diligence, you know, trying to figure out how do you become a master craftsman of what it is you want to do. And the path to getting there, the first path to getting there is often recognizing that person that you think is really great and just emulating what they're doing. That's how you develop the basic skills of your craft, is just emulate. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean, hey, copy what they're doing and put it out there for sale. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean, that's ripping people off, right? That's a different thing. But if your goal is just to get better at what you're doing, emulate, copy. My son's learning guitar right now. And, you know, when he first picked up the guitar, I didn't say, hey, why don't you go write some amazing Jimi Hendrix sounding thing, right? No, of course not. The first thing he does is he picks it up and he learns some basic chords by emulating a video on you or whatever. And now he's like learning Beatles songs. He's learning Nirvana songs, but he's learning by emulating other people. And then there'll come a time when he has a mastery of those basic techniques and those basic skills, those building blocks, and he'll be able to diverge. He'll begin to take risks and try new things and experiment and find his own voice in that. But it all begins by building that basic platform. And I think, you know, many people today, especially in today's marketplace, I find people coming in wanting to have, like, wanting to wield tons of authority, wanting to wield, you know, have lots of latitude, you know, be able to make big decisions, move big rocks, but they haven't done that necessary work to be able to build a platform of understanding, of context, to be able to make those decisions effectively, you know, be able to do great work. And so we lionize, like, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world and the people who basically just came out of your university and built these billion-dollar enterprises. The reality is, for most people, it's a long process of figuring it out, emulating, developing, you know, your platform of expression based on those rudimentary skills. And then you're able to make a leap and you're able to be successful because you have that basic understanding, you know, that foundation upon which to build your best work.
And some of that comes back to the dailies that you talk about in the book.
Right. Yeah. So I was speaking at an event in San Diego last year. And in order to get out to the resort on Coronado Island, we had to go between, like, this naval base on one side. And on the other side was the Navy SEAL BUDS, you know, training center. And my driver was telling me that you will see the Navy SEALs out there 24/7. Like, you'll see them out there working out at like 12:03. They'll be out there at like, you know, 6:30 in the morning. They'll be out there at 3 in the afternoon. And it's sort of, you know, random when you'll see them out there training and doing stuff. And he said the reason, his buddy who was stationed there said the reason they do that is because they have to be ready at a moment's notice. You know, they might get called out at 3 in the morning. They might get called out at 3 in the afternoon. They don't know. So they have to be ready. They have to be battle ready at all times, you know, ready to deploy. And I started thinking, I was like, what would it take for me to be battle ready? You know, I think many of us, we gear up for a big project, or when we had, like, you and I, we write books, right? Like, we gear up to write a book, but we're not doing the little things every single day to prepare us to deliver great results when it matters most. And so surrounding that, I had developed a series of practices I call the dailies, which are a series of everyday activities that I engage in that allow me to stay battle ready, that keep me in game shape, that keep me ready to deliver if an opportunity comes along. Because the reality is, we know this, an opportunity is only an opportunity if you're ready to take advantage of it. You know, I know it's a cliche, but it's true. It's a cliche because it's true. If you can't take advantage of an opportunity, then it doesn't matter. So if I'm going to be writing a book and the only time I write is when a publisher is paying me to write words, it's going to be really hard for me to deliver my best work. But if I, like I do, if I'm writing a set amount of words every single day, regardless of whether there's a project, you know, but I'm writing simply because I know that I have to stay in game shape, I have to be a master of my craft, then I'm going to be ready to deliver when the pressure is on. So my question for anybody listening is, what does that mean for you? What are the everyday things? It could be I do an active business development every day. I reach out, I cold call someone every day. It could be, you know, it could be writing. It could be I have a meaningful conversation with someone on my team. I have a, you know, difficult conversation every day. Whatever it is, what are those daily disciplines that you need to build in so that you're prepared when the pressure is on?
I love it. I love it. It's a great question. Todd Henry, the author of Louder Than Words, Harness the Power of Your Authentic Voice. It is such a pleasure. I'm a big fan of your work too. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you, Peter.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.